Calendar, your go-to weekly update on the latest events, actions, and initiatives promoting equity, justice, and change across our community. The calendar's mission is to connect you with the heartbeat of grassroots activism in the DMV. Each week, we'll spotlight rallies, workshops, forums, and community actions happening across the region. If you have an event to share, submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org.
At 89.3 FM, this is member-supported WPFW, Washington.
Would you join me, please, in welcoming me?
Redeem a full of culture.
I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome to the Collision. This is the place where sports and politics collide. Here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM WPFW, trying to change this world one broadcast at a time. As you might imagine, a very tumultuous world in the world of sports and politics, just like it's a very tumultuous world in the world of politics. I'm Dave Zirin, thrilled to break it down with you today with 10-year NBA veteran and man about town, Etan Thomas. How you doing, sir?
How you doing, Dave? Doing all right?
Oh, man, great to hear your voice in these tough times, man. For real. And frankly, your social media recently, Etan, has been giving me life. So thank you for being you. Chuck Modiano, how you doing, sir? Are you with us?
I'm with us. I'm doing great. Great to be with you, DZ and Etan.
Excellent. Well, yo, we've got so much to discuss this week. We want to discuss the Trumpism that's being given a round of applause in the world of professional sports in a way that other athletes with different politics, perhaps, let's just say, did not get in years past. We also want to speak a little bit about what's going on in your National Basketball Association, what is taking place throughout the league. We always love doing that, and if there's time to do it, we want to do it. But we also want to talk about, and I know some of you, whether you admit it or not, watched it, that Tyson fight, Mike Tyson, age 58 years old. And the reason why we got to talk about it, his boxing match against Jake Paul, is because, you know, this was, Etan, I'll just throw this at you real quick, and then we'll get to the important stuff. Mm-hmm. Did you know, Etan, that Mike Tyson-Jake Paul fight made more money than any non-Las Vegas fight in the history of boxing globally?
Yeah, I mean, that's not a surprise. Wow. Mike Tyson is always going to be a draw. Always. You know what I mean? I think I saw right afterwards that Evander Holyfield said that he wanted to, you know, do the trilogy. And that would have been a draw, too, no matter what. It would have been. Even after what we saw the other night, Evander Holyfield would have been a draw. It's just that's what Mike Tyson brings.
Yeah, we're going to have to circle back to that and talk about the mystique of Mike. But first, look, Etan, we want to jump into all this stuff, but Chuck and I spoke last week. We haven't spoken to you in a hot minute. How are you? How is your family? How is everybody processing what's been happening in recent months? Obviously, I'm referring to the pre-election, election, and post-election horror show that we've been all witness to.
I mean, goodness gracious, it's been a lot, you know? And it's interesting because as people see the different moves that Trump is making, the different people that he's appointing, the different things that he's, you know, putting out there that he's going to try to implement that he said before that he was going to do, it's amazing seeing people being surprised, you know what I mean? I'm like, well, what did you think you were getting, you know? I mean, especially his cabinet picks. I'm like, okay. You know, you know what it is with him. You know he's picking people that he's friends with, that are loyal to him. Not necessarily qualified for the job, but they're loyal to him. And that's his main thing. And it's just, you know, it's interesting seeing that. But it's, I don't know. It's there's a lot to just go through with that. I don't know if we don't delve into all of that, but we're in for quite a ride for these next 4 years.
We are. And if there's one thing I want to throw out there, not that it matters overwhelmingly, but I think it's important for people to know is, you know, they're still counting votes. Trump's, you know, seriously, like there are still votes being counted. And as the votes are being counted, they're from Western states, which overwhelmingly go to the Democrats, go to Harris. And that's all important because Trump's total vote total is now under 50%. And I just think that's important. I don't know, ideologically for people, just to be like, okay, it's not over 50% in this country for Trump. I know it might not matter practically, and I know it's not going to slow him down. I mean, he would do whatever he wants to do if he got 5% of the vote. He wouldn't care or slow down for a second. But just to put that out there so people know it going forward, I think is important.
Yeah,
it breaks the whole blowout narrative.
That's what I was going to say. You took the words out of my mouth. That's the shocking part that people are still trying to come to grips with was how so many people supported him. So I do think it is important to see actually what the numbers were. I agree.
Yeah. So to take it to the world of sports, a quick story, and then I'll throw it to you, Tom. Quick story. I mean, this is how reality gets formed. What happened to me earlier this week, guys. I wrote about it too, but I get this phone call from TMZ. TMZ. Never gotten a phone call from TMZ. I was like, oh my gosh, am I in some affair with a Hollywood actor? I didn't know. You know, I was like, what did I do? You got video of me doing something? Like immediately, it's like, you know, your brain goes, why are they calling me? You know, it's like, police, open the door. But then I'm like, why are you calling me? And they're like, we want to talk to you because we do our show TMZ Live and we're doing a big segment on how Donald Trump dominated the sports weekend. And I was like, well, that doesn't sound like anything I want to do. Nice talking to you. click. And total click. I mean, and you know when it was guaranteed I was going to put that phone down was when they said it's pre-taped. Because then I was like, oh, now I can't even go on and like do some stunt or something or speak some truth. Because, you know, pre-tape, give me a break.
They would cut you out. They would cut you out. If you said your substance, they would cut you out.
And this is TMZ, too, their owner, longtime friend of Trump. And then they sold TMZ to Fox News a couple years ago. So it's all like a big money laundering operation. And so I said, no. I don't want to talk about Trump dominating the sports weekend. But then when I got off the phone, I didn't really know what they were talking about. I was like, dominate? That sounds like a lot. So I Google dominate sports weekend Trump, and only one thing comes up, and it's a big Fox News article called Trump dominates sports weekend. So you feel what I'm saying? It's like Fox, which owns TMZ, it's like it becomes a loop where they try to create this reality of Trump dominating the sports weekend. And then I looked up, what does dominating the sports weekend mean? It means like three NFL players did that weird dance that he does at the end of rallies after like sacks and touchdowns. And then UFC did like basically a big party for him at Madison Square Garden. And UFC has always been pro-Trump. It's always been a place where Trumpists live. And NFL players, give me a break. Of course, there's some conservative NFL players. But to turn that into this narrative that, like, America loves Trump and even the sports world is embracing Trump, I mean, the hypocrisy of the celebration of that hit me pretty hard. Etan, what were your thoughts when you saw all this break out?
I mean, you wrapped it up. I mean, it's a little bit overblown, but I think that they want to run with the narrative that so many people are supporting Trump now, which goes back to your first point as far as the election, you know, count and what they really are pushing, that so many people are backing him now. Even the athletes, they're backing him. And there's all that, you know, that's the narrative that they're trying to push. And it's just interesting. You know, it's really interesting. And you mentioned it in your article, the double standard of, you know, these are the same people that were telling athletes to shut up and dribble. The same people are telling athletes to stay in their lane, stay in your place. You have no politics, shouldn't be in sports. You know, all of this different stuff. The same exact people are praising the athletes for having the courage to stand up and speak out for Trump. But not, you know, you see them, the same commentators, and they're all singing their praises. It's just the hypocrisy. You know, and you can always go through the list of hypocrisy with Trump supporters and the administration. That's not anything new, but it still is just interesting to see, you know. But that's what I see about that. You know, they're trying to just really push it. And you know, I do feel that every athlete has the right to be able to say whatever they want to say. I've always felt on that. And everybody has the right to disagree. You know what I mean? Just right. as well. But just the hypocrisy of them, you know, the way that they bash Kaepernick and the way that they bash LeBron and all the different athletes who dare, you know, and now they're praised, that switch is just, you know, that's a little much.
Yeah, and now LeBron's taking a social media break. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah,
but I saw. To me, it was sort of like, yeah, you and the rest of America, it right. feels like, after this last period, or at least half of America anyway. Chuck, your thoughts about the Trumpiness of the sports world right now and how you read that?
Well, let's start with what Etan just said and you recently wrote about versus Nick Bosa. Is Kaepernick always comes to mind, right? Kaepernick is the guy who comes to mind because this is a man who is blackballed. This is a man who you can say probably lost up to, or I would say was robbed, up to $200-300 million in the last 2 years. And where do I come up with that? We could look at Derek Carr's salary, who's never even made a playoff game, never won any playoff game, never won a playoff game. And Derek Carr, I think since Kaepernick was blackballed, made about $300 million, $200, $300 million. So we have to look at this as a robbery. Yeah, sheesh is right. You know, Kirk Cousins more than that. We have to look at this as a robbery because we know collusion is illegal. So I think of it as literally someone taking that money out of his rightful pocket, a guy who had 6 playoff games and went to the Super Bowl, went to the championship game and was 4-2 and played incredible. There's like Kaepernick and then there's playoff Kaepernick. So I think of him, I think of those losses, how much he wanted to get back in the league and all the shut up and dribble that we hear. And all of a sudden, well, we're not hearing that anymore. But if truth be told, we were never hearing it. There was never a time when the right wing was not using sports effectively. There was never a time when the Department of Defense was not spending billions of dollars so we could have flyovers. And I have to tell you, I was at my first Bills game. I was in Buffalo this weekend. I was at a Bills game. Those Bills fans are wild. They got Bills Mafia for a reason, and wild in a positive way, I will actually say. They really, you know, are into their team, blocks and blocks of tailgating, and so forth. But what I was struck with as I sat in this Bills game, you know, on TV, we might see an opening with someone singing the national anthem and their military or their police. And we may get one more clip. Every break where they go to a commercial, it was military. It was police. They were being honored over and over and over and over. And I hadn't been to a game in so long, I couldn't believe how integrated it was. So, you know, this is something that's already happening. And I think what Trump has done, and Trump is a master in media, is he has a 99 incompetencies or more. But one thing he does know is he knows media savvy. So he uses that, and that's an extension of what right wing have done to utilize sports to their benefit all these years. So I see it as an extension of that.
No, makes all the sense in the world. For seriously, it's, I mean, but it's on, I mean, at what point do we wonder when you're going to hear a robust response from a lot of the athletes who've been working against everything that Trump stands for? I mean, Trump wants to make immunity part of being a police officer. And meanwhile, you have dozens and dozens of players who still play in the league who've spoken out against police violence. But it does seem like there's a fear factor on the other side that I really do see reflected in the broader society. I'm not just putting this on athletes at all, but it does feel like there's a muting involved. I mean, do you see that too? And do you think athletes can maybe play a role in getting people motivated to speak in this moment where so many people feel pushed back?
I think there's a lot of negativity going on, and a lot of people, the athletes are or have been using social media as their ways to get their messages out. You know, and you referenced it earlier while LeBron is taking a break, and he talked about some of the negativity. He didn't go into a lot of specifics about it. He was talking about overall negativity. I think he referenced a tweet by, I can't think of his name right now, but he's somebody's agent. But he talked.
Oh, talking Rick Kleinman.
There we go. Thank you.
Durant's agent. Yeah.
There we go. And, you know, just talking about the negativity of media coverage and, you know, but it's not just media coverage. All of, you know, Twitter, X, whatever, you know, has just really taken on this entire negative right wing, you know, X ultra conservative, ultra Trump supporting. And we've talked about it here. I was like, you know, when Elon took over, we're like, well, what's going on with Twitter? Are you getting all this white stuff all of a sudden and all of this porn and all of this like terrible, like, negative aspect? Are you getting it flooded on your Twitter, or is it just me? And it's crazy because I think that does have a little bit of a contributing factor as to you're seeing why people first are leaving Twitter. You know, I'm you know, making my way over to Threads and, you know, some of the other ideas myself. I haven't all the way did it yet, but I'm making my way. But there is this negative like cloud around social media right now, and people are kind of searching for where to find their voice, where they can find their tribe and speak. And I'm not just talking about just athletes, just all around. And I think this is a little bit of a reflection on the times we're in, because now, even going back to your first point, is the narrative that they want to push is that there's an overwhelming majority of people who agree with them. That's the feeling. That's the narrative. So when you talk about social media, why it's all flooding with all of this, you know, this white, you know, supremacists, this Trump supporting, and all these different, this vile is contributing to that. They want this overwhelming feeling that we are all on one accord with this and this everywhere. And I think that's all done by design.
Wow. Yeah, I agree with you on that 1,000%. It's got people dislocated. It's got people back on their heels. It's got people looking for community and realizing that some of the communities that they've built over the years have more holes in them than some Swiss cheese because of the way these algorithms can be manipulated. Chuck, what, you know, you were in Buffalo, Chuck, seeing this Bills-Chiefs game.
Yeah.
And I remember, and I could be very wrong about this. But I remember Buffalo being a very interesting place when Colin Kaepernick did his protests in the fall of 2016, because not only is Buffalo, you know, considered to be a more conservative, certainly very white, even by NFL fan bases standards. And when I say by NFL fan bases, I mean who goes to the stadium, not who watches the games.
Right, right.
You always got to be clear about that because of cost. And when people say NFL fans are all white, I'm like, what?
Right.
But cost stadium in Buffalo, Green Bay, we all know what I'm saying right here. So Buffalo also, though, was a place that had, I think, the most significant except for Seattle, the most significant pro-Kaepernick protest when the 49ers came to town. Like, we support Colin, all this stuff. Did you, you know, which speaks to Buffalo, also is kind of like this working class community. It's got a union history. What was your vibe off the political vibe, I guess I'd say, off that Buffalo scene and what you saw?
It's a good question. I don't feel I was in a space to, like, answer that question accurately. Now, Buffalo is 33% Black. Right. You know, so there is a sizable Black population there. And what I noticed is, to your question about who can get in the stadium, which we have that issue everywhere. The stadium is always wider than the fan base, almost no matter where you go. But I have never seen tailgating, and I was tailgating, by the way, go blocks and blocks and blocks and blocks. Like, all of Buffalo comes out. This is not just, you know, people in the parking lot. The whole city comes out. I've never seen anything like it. As far as the sheer volume, it's an event, it's a day. There's not a whole lot of going on in Buffalo. You know, Buffalo Bills are your identity. And one fan told me, we don't say goodbye, we say go Bills, right? Sabres are big there. And outside of that, you don't have a basketball team since McAdoo was doing great things in the 70s and the Buffalo Braves moved. You don't have a baseball team. It's an identity. Those losses are hard. When Scott Norwood, right, and I hate to do that because I never like to scapegoat anyone, and I'm not scapegoating him, but when that misses, it's not the same for another team or another place. It hits hard, so they're so invested. I don't know if I've ever seen a team so invested. I think they really earned the Bills Mafia game. You know, when they play other places, they could play in Indianapolis, and you're going to have Bills fans travel to Indianapolis and outdo the Colts fans that happened recently. That's happened in playoff games. So I don't know if I could necessarily answer your question. Did I see a lot of, you know, Black fans in the streets? Yes. Did I do enough digging to get a sense of the racial consciousness? Not really. You know, there's some areas you drive through, it's all Trump. And there's some areas you drive through where we were at, it wasn't Trump. There were different signs. I can't really answer that question well without a little more research. Sorry about that.
It's good to get that, though, because it's good to get some flavor of what's going on there. The intensity is amazing.
They're banging every third down and one. They're banging the seats. And I'm sitting here with a fan from Indianapolis who came with me. I'm with a group. And they said, we don't see this in the Colts stadium. He's an Indy fan. And he was like, wow, these are real fans. And they're standing up the whole time like it's a college game. The pros fans don't normally stand up like they do at college games. So it's a wild atmosphere.
Wow. You think about that level of intensity and that level of buy-in and that level of belonging in the context of a country right now where people feel scared and don't really know what's going to happen with themselves or their neighbors in the weeks and months ahead. I mean, is sports going to be just like this big distraction for us, like Gladiator 2 or something? Or can this be something that we use, which I'm going to see, by the way, or is this something that we're, could this be like a source of community for us in the months ahead? Because we are headed for some pretty serious times.
So let me tell a quick story. Quick story.
Please.
I know we got to go to break.
No. Keep it long, Bubba.
I was at an event with the Wizards, me and Harvey Grant, and it was a basketball game for them. This was a few days ago, for the veterans. So they were playing basketball. We were like the coaches and, you know, we were coaching the team, we're talking with them and everything like that. So, I'm, you know, sitting to the side and they're asking me questions and everything like that. And I don't remember if I brought it up or if they brought it up, but I said, what did y'all think about, this whole thing with Michael Strahan? And then they kind of laughed and it was like, well, that's a whole lot of nothing. And I was like, yeah, and they was like, yeah, nobody, it, they're like, listen, and you know, and most of these veterans were Black. I will say that.
I gotta interrupt you though, because what happened with Michael Strahan? Could you tell us?
Oh, I'm sorry.
In case people don't.
Sorry about that. Well, there was a big brouhaha, you know, with all of the right being upset because he didn't put his hand on his heart during the national anthem. The Monday Night Football was at an event, and they were all standing up, and he didn't put his hand on his heart. That's all. He didn't take a knee.
Serious?
He didn't do the Black Power salute. He just didn't put his hand on his heart. So they was in an uproar. That's what happened.
Good God.
That was the topic for a while. So I was asking what they thought about it, and they all laughed. They was like, there's nothing to discuss. This was nothing. Like, they were, you know, so they were like, well, really, people don't understand. And this is the thing that really stuck out with it, because I've had this conversation with my grandfather, you know, so many times before he passed, and he said the same thing. And he fought in the Korean conflict. And they said, well, we're fighting so people have the right to be able to do whatever they want to do. They were like, this isn't North Korea where you have to do, you know, you have to do this and you have to do this. And no, you have the right to be able to do what you want to do. That's the whole point. And they all agreed. And I was like, man, I wish I could record that and put it out there so everybody could, you know, because it was kind of in the middle of when they were, all of the right were so upset, I guess, fake outrage about Michael Strahan so much that they were calling for his job. And I was like, you know, it's not how the veterans feel. What you were saying is not what they're saying. And, you know, it's just, I there's a long way to answer your question. It was a great event because we were using basketball and having these conversations that I wouldn't have had the opportunity to have with them, you know what I mean, in any other kind of setting like that. So there is still, you know, things where sports definitely does bring, you know, people together, bring people talking, you know, things of that nature. But then there's also different times where sports is being weaponized, like to your first point, you know, with the promotion of whatever position the people want to promote. And that's the problematic part.
Wow, that's deep, man. Chuck, you have anything you want to throw onto that before we go to break at the bottom of the hour?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the backlash against Strahan was absolutely utterly ridiculous. It was so silly. And a lot of it, of course, is manufactured. And, you know, Etan has been real outspoken about it. And when he apologized, Etan, you didn't have to apologize. There's no apology necessary. So the whole thing was ridiculous. It's an extension of Kaepernick. Kaepernick never said anything against the military, and they made it against the military. So the real point I want to make is in a day where the right wing people are saying woke this and woke that, there is nothing more powerful than patriotic correctness. And patriotic correctness is de facto censorship. It is a de facto suppression of speech. And the very people who are often suppressing speech and promoting censorship now cry when we talk about conscience raising, and they have a whole narrative around that that is actually pushing laws in this country. But it's ridiculous. Patriotic correctness is the problem.
Wow. Amen to that. I mean, it's so ridiculous. That this thing, though, has been beyond ridiculous. I mean, Michael Strahan has never tried to do anything really to awake the anger and ire of the white lash in this country. And yet they're always looking for more victims because they know it increases the fear factor. And they survive off of fear. It's like fire and oxygen. If people aren't scared, they cannot blaze. But before we go to break, Etan, I know this election season was not exactly filled with grand news, but your hometown, Tulsa, Oklahoma, the tragic site of the Tulsa race massacre from a century ago, just elected the first Black Tulsan as the city's mayor, Monroe Nichols. Mm-hmm. Can you tell, all I know about it, I got to tell you, Etan, is the headline. Monroe Nichols, former representative, state rep, first mayor, Tulsa, African-American. Can you tell us anything about this? Monroe Nichols, the vibe in Tulsa, anything about that?
I mean, Tulsa is very much conservative. Tulsa is very much, you know, attempting to be a carbon copy of Texas. You know, that's what it's been historically. And so for this to be, you know, 103 years after the Tulsa race massacre, for this to be the first Black mayor. And it's crazy because, you know, sometimes I tell stories about my kids and my daughter, baby Sierra. She was like, you know, are we still having the first Black things now in 2024? And I was like, yeah, as ridiculous as it sounds, yes, this is the first Black mayor ever in Tulsa. You know what I mean? And it was a big thing, but then when you go back and look at it, you're like, well, how is this the first Black mayor ever, you know, to ever happen? Mm-hmm. So, but it definitely is a big deal. And, you know, of course you have to see how everything happens once he's in office, but there's definitely a lot of you know, hope and a lot of you know, excitement in Tulsa about it. He was a, you know, a great. I mean, everything that he ran on, that he wants to do and improve education, improve. But the tough part is right after he was elected, then they had the Department of Education just bought, like, what was it, like 700 Trump Bibles. And now if you kind of understand Oklahoma education, it's 49th in the country. 49th. That's what it is. And it's like, okay, they're always talking about how they don't have funds and they don't have this, but then they spend all this money on Trump Bibles. I mean, this is a whole thing. I know we got to get to break. No.
It's crazy.
Yeah, so there's a lot. There's a long way to go in Oklahoma.
And, you know, I think that I'm remembering this correctly. The education secretary for the state of Oklahoma made it mandatory for all students to watch a video of him.
Of him praying for Trump. Yeah, of him praying for Trump. And he was also trying to vie for a, you know, position in the cabinet. You know, that's what he was doing. But yeah, no, that's what he did. Just what you read.
Do you remember when the right wing freaked out just because President Obama, his first fall in office, just wanted to give a welcome back greeting to the students?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Remember that? Yeah. Do you remember that freak out? Like, oh, he wants us to be like communist China.
Pay tribute
to Obama, and it's like, whoa, but now we have Trump Bibles being mandatory. Right. I mean, whatever. We all know the hypocrisy. The number one political tool of the Republican Party is shamelessness. Yeah. That is their secret skill. That is their magic. They have just no shame. All right, we'll go to break right now. We're going to come back in just a second. I got to talk to these guys about the political spectacle that was Mike Tyson and Jake Paul and all the rest of it. We'll be back right after this on The Collision.
What are you trying to accomplish? What would you like this, you know, to be the end game for you?
That's basically. I mean, ultimately, it's to bring awareness and make people, you know, realize what's really going on in this country. There are a lot of things that are going on that are unjust. People aren't being held accountable for. And that's something that needs to change. That's something that, you know, this country stands for: freedom, liberty, justice for all. And it's not happening for all right now.
Back here.
That was a short break.
Wow, short break, but still, I mean, Kaepernick, it's like, let's hear that voice, Colin. That was fantastic. We're back here on The Collision. He's Etan Thomas. He's Chuck Modiano. I'm Dave Zirin here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM, WPFW. Here's the big question. Did you view the Iron Mike Tyson, Jake Paul fight? What were your reasons for viewing it? What were your reasons for not viewing it? I've gotten so much variance in terms of the people around me, in terms of they saw it or not, their reasons for seeing it or not, just incredible reasoning all over the landscape, that from political, social, cultural, some people just want to see Jake Paul get punched really, really hard. Just so much. Etan Thomas, were you a viewer of this, and what was your thoughts about that?
So to be honest, I kind of gave up on it when it was having the buffering issues. So I turned it off. I turned it off and went to sleep. I'm gonna be honest with you, but I did see all everything that happened afterwards. It was interesting because when I was watching it, I was like, why am I sitting here watching the Jerry what's my man's name? From Dallas. And they were like
Jerry Jones,
right? Why am I sitting there watching them talk of what are they talking about? Like, what is this? And they cut, they went to Rosie Perez. And then they had, you know, and then it was just buffering and it kept stopping. And I was like, okay, Netflix, if y'all are going to stream this, y'all got to get some kind of, just, you know, looking at everything the next day. You know, I know what it was. It wasn't a real fight. It wasn't a real boxing match. You saw that anybody that has seen Mike Tyson over the years, even at his age now, knows how he fights and knows that what they saw was not how he fights. You know what I mean? So that part. But it's just the draw. It's the draw of his name. And Mike Tyson could be 100 years old and people are going to tune in and watch because it's him. And that's just, you know, it's something that's, I don't know if any other you know, boxer right now could do that, could draw, like, you know, out of their prime, retired and out. You know, I don't know if, you know, anyone, just name anyone that's coming back, would have that level of a draw like Mike Tyson does. But it's just something that's special about him that just brings people out.
You know, he has an aura, he has a mystique, he has a legend, he has a pop cultural currency that I think is always going to bring people back to see what he has to do. But wow, 58 years old against some 27-year-old Jake Paul, YouTube influencer who people say is a good boxer. I didn't see any of that. I did stick through the buffering problems. I felt like it was a cultural event that demanded witnessing. I spoke to Coach McNutt about it. He said, there's no way I will ever watch this, ever, ever, ever. You know, this is just a complete spectacle that I will not be a part of or watch in any way. But I was like, no, but I want to see it because of like the discussion it's going to provoke, what it all means. You know, later the Trump people were like, yeah, Paul and Tyson, two Trump supporters. It's like, just be quiet, please. And so Chuck, I don't think you saw any of it, Chuck. But
no, I saw it.
Thinking, oh, talk to me. What your thoughts, impressions?
I mean, please. I wasn't going to pay-per-view for it. I wasn't going to spend money like that, but it was on Netflix, so I saw it. Well, you know what? I thought it went how I thought it would go, because I always thought if Tyson doesn't get a shot off in the first two rounds, and he actually won the first round, and he was going to run out of gas. Like, guys near 60. You know what I mean? I just know from getting older, I can't do things I could do 10 years ago, let alone, you know, 25 years ago. You run out of gas. Stamina is going to be the first thing that goes. The one thing you maintain is a power punch. You do maintain your power. Now, that punch may take a lot longer to get there, you know, but when it hits, if he knocked him out in the first round, I could see that as viable up to the second. After the second, you saw Tyson go into survival. I'm just going to try to survive and stay on my feet the rest of the way. And I think that's the fight. And I think if you ran that fight, you know, 10 times, maybe Tyson wins one or two because he hits a knockout punch rushing at the beginning, but he's going to lose 8 or 9, just the same way we saw that. And we know Jake Paul knows he's 27 and he's going to use that to his advantage.
I know a lot of people were saying, well, why didn't Mike just do like one flurry? Why didn't he run up and just do one thing? Like we've seen him sparring and hitting a heavy bag and throwing 100 punches. I don't know if people realize like how much physical exertion it actually takes to box. Etan, in your training as a pro athlete, did you ever box as part of your training?
Yeah, I did. And it's no. People don't understand. Like, you get tired very quickly.
Yeah. Like, at your best, Etan, like when you were in your best shape and you were doing 3 minutes in the ring, how'd you feel after even 3 minutes?
Yeah, you're tired. And this is just with you hitting a heavy bag and moving around a little bit or something like that and not having people hit you. Like, if people don't understand, you know, the level of shape that you have to be in to box. But in also with that being said, when everyone saw the different clips of Mike training and stuff like that, and that's what they were expecting to see when they turned on the fight. You know what I mean? So I can understand all the people complaining and the backlash from it, because it's like, wait a minute, this is not what we signed up for.
Well, yeah, exactly.
This is not it. This is not Iron Mike, you know? So I definitely understand that. But it, like I said, it wasn't a real fight. But people also, I feel like they should have known that it wasn't going to be a real fight. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because he is 60. You know, I didn't really expect to see him doing that for, you know, numerous rounds, or, you know, and even though everybody wanted to see Jake Paul get knocked out, you know, I think Mike could have really hurt him. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the same way of the last fight with Roy Jones Jr. I was like, yeah, Mike could really hurt him if he, like, this is not good. So, you know, he pulled back then. And so I didn't really have a lot of high expectations that it wouldn't be something similar. Because if you saw the Roy Jones Jr. fight, you saw Mike was holding back then. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that's not how he fought. It wasn't this bad or this extreme. I'll say this extreme. But, you know, the expectations kind of should have been a little bit tempered there.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I had the same reaction, and I haven't really been willing to say that too publicly. But it felt like to me that Jake Paul, all I heard leading up to the fight was, oh, Jake Paul, you know, he's actually a good boxer. You know, he's trained so hard. He's this great athlete. maybe that's true. I didn't see any of it in that fight. I saw something pretty sad from his side. And in his gloves, he got tired too. His gloves were down for a lot of the fight. And I kept thinking, wow, even at age 58, you know, if Mike wanted to, this could get very, very ugly very, very quickly. I mean, we're talking about somebody in Mike Tyson who, when I was growing up, once punched a boxer named Mitch Blood Green outside Dapper Dan's in Harlem, New York, and actually broke a bone in his hand. Mitch Green's face looked like it was part of some sort of weird CGI computer-generated change after Mike hit him. And Mike Tyson also, the police, NYPD, you gotta love him, in the 1980s, they wanted to charge Mike with assault with a deadly weapon because of one punch. Now, I just think, and obviously that just says something, though, the mystique he carried, you know? And in New York, especially in the late 80s, it was ridiculous. But Chuck, did you get any sense of that, that if Mike wanted to, this could be very, very different? Or are we still just, like, imbuing him with our hopes of him, I don't know, beating up Jake Paul or just doing one for the middle-aged guys? I mean, what do you think?
Well, that wasn't my feeling. First of all, he also had a knee brace on. He obviously had also
some injury.
About the knee brace. Yeah. And he wasn't about to cancel the second time after the first fight. He had to cancel because of ulcers. So now they set a new date. And if he wasn't 100%, besides being near 60, he wasn't about to do that. So I think he had two choices. He did the plan that you suggested earlier, that people suggested, which is just bum rush him in the first round and go all out. But the backside of that plan is, if that plan fails, he probably doesn't end the fight on his feet because he used up too much gas. Or give it two rounds to try to do something, and if you can't, survive. So I think that was a package deal. If I'm Tyson, that's going through my head. Do I want, Jake Paul standing over me? A picture that would be... to live on, you know, you don't want that. So I could see why maybe he didn't go all out the first round to avoid that other outcome.
Yeah, no, I hear that. 5 trillion percent. But it's, wow. I mean, it's spectacle, but at the same time, it's like Mike Tyson. I mean, this is what does he do for a living? He's Mike Tyson. That's his job. Mike Tyson's job is being Mike Tyson. So it's like, as long as people are willing to pay for that, then he should be able to do what he needs to do to make a living and make his life. I just think, like, I'm just still shocked, though, Etan. Like, 58 years old, his last really good fight was before, I bet, over 50% of the audience was even born. And yet he still holds this mystique. It's just stunning to me, after all this time, that people still want to know more, see more of him. I'm not sure what it says about us, but it says something.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's like I said, he's still Iron Mike. So even at 60, people are going to want to see he's going to be that draw. So that's just not going to go away.
Do you remember the DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince song about could I beat Mike Tyson or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, he's still, when you see the old clip, that was being shown, leading up to the fight, and the promotion was good. That's what it used to look like,
Yeah,
used to look like, so.
Yeah, still very much credited for bringing hip hop into boxing. I don't know how true that is, but that's what you always hear. Big LL, they were close, but I digress. Let's go to a quick break right now, and we come back, we're gonna speak about what is actually making our eyes go up with this current NBA season, see what's out there that's making us look twice, see what's out there that we didn't expect, and see what's out there that we wish would change right away and go for the better. And I'm talking about Joel Embiid. I'm also going to ask Etan what he thinks about these baby Wizards. We'll be back right after this on The Collision.
Is because you can then misuse words like oppression. There has been no oppression for the white man in this country. You tell me which white men were dragged out of their homes. You tell me which one of them got dragged all the way across an ocean and told that you are gonna go and work. We are gonna steal your wives. We are gonna rape your wives. That didn't happen. That is oppression. We didn't ask to be here. We not the same migrants that y'all constantly come up against. We didn't run away from home. We were stolen. So yeah, we are going to sit here and be offended when you want to sit here and act like, and don't let it escape you that it is white men on this side of the aisle telling us, people of color on this side of the aisle, that y'all are the ones being oppressed.
Wow, powerful words. We're back here on The Collision, 89.3 FM, WPFW, where sports and politics collide. Etan Thomas, Chuck Modiano, I'm Dave Zirin. Etan, what were we just listening to?
That was Representative Jasmine Crockett.
I thought that was Jasmine Crockett.
Yeah, and if you listen to the whole breakdown, and she's talking about diversity and why diversity is actually good and how it's been as a business model and even an investing model, you know, how it's been more beneficial. And she started going through what oppression looks like and talking about how the right has used that white men are being oppressed as kind of like their calling card and to rile the people. It was really good. So I would encourage people to go and look it up if they get a chance.
Yeah, I think more people need to be following her lead, frankly, right now. And, you know, taking off the kids' gloves and going after some of this stuff, because this Trump stuff is not nearly as popular as the pundits are saying it is. Like, you can go after this. There are weaknesses to this coalition that he's trying to put together. And people got to remember that. Yo, we're talking NBA season. Etan, you said you were just doing something with the Wizards, with Harvey Grant. I'm going to be very straight with you. I am much more entertained by these Washington Wizards, who, by the way, have a better record right now than the Philadelphia 76ers. That's true. That's true. They may be second to last, but they're not last. But unlike the 76ers, who thought they were going to be competing for a title this year, and who knows, they still might, the Wizards are basically playing heavy rotation points for like four teenagers. And one of them, Bilal Coulibaly, man, is just the truth to me. I love watching him play. The other three cats are good, are fun to watch too. But hey, maybe I'm just a homer. Etan Thomas, what do you think of this year's iteration of the team? Much more watchable than I thought it would be. Much more fun.
Oh yeah, well, they're a young team, you know, and that's just people have to just understand that this is just a year where you let the young players play and you let them grow, and you know what I mean, you know, welcome them to the NBA. They start getting better and better. That's going to have to be kind of the expectation for this year, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But as far as Philly, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, Embiid from the beginning, it was like there was a kind of a cloud around Embiid.
Yes.
And it's just gotten worse and worse. I mean, I understand the part. I mean, maybe he shouldn't say out loud that he's not planning on playing in any back-to-backs, you know, right after, you know, maybe that wasn't the best thing to do. You don't have to tell the media everything. You don't have to say, you know what I mean? Like, you don't, like, I don't know if there was really a reason for him to say that. But, you know, they got off to a slow start. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. Paul George was hurt, you know, and then they, you know, and the thing that gets you is when you start having the leaks happen and they say, okay, well, they had a closed meeting that nobody else was in, but this is exactly what happened. I'm like, whoa, how y'all know everything that happened if it was a closed meeting that don't, you know, so those things just aren't good signs of things to come. So I don't.
Well, because we know for a fact that, you know, we know about that meeting. Not because the media fabricated it, but because there was a total leak. Like somebody just spilled everything that happened. Because afterwards, Embiid didn't deny it. He just was like really, really, really upset that somebody had went to the press. How are you supposed to have trust if that happens? But I'll also just ask you, Tom, like of the baby Wizards, so I'm sorry, I can't stop thinking about them. You got Alex Saar, Bub Carrington, this kid, Keyshawn George, and, of course, second-year player Bilal Coulibaly. Who among them, like, do you look at and you're like, whoa, that guy's really the truth. I hope he's here in 10 years.
So I like all of them, to be honest with you. And
yeah, me too.
I can even compare them to when the Lakers had that a whole lot of young talent a few years ago, mm-hmm. And they kept none of them. You know what I mean? That's what I kind of hope doesn't happen here. to be quite honest. I think that they're all continue to grow. They're all going to continue to get better and better, and they're going to all grow into being really great players. I worry about what this process is going to look like in a few years when, you know, you transition from, okay, we're not rebuilding anymore, now we want to win now. So now we're going to take these young players that have shown that they can do this and then get this player. You know what I mean? Because that's usually what happens in this. And you end up trading a young player who might not have, you know, reached their potential yet at that time. But then you see 2 years after he's traded, then they've blown up. That's kind of what I you know, I made that, you know, correlation with the Lakers. They had a lot of young talent there, and they just, that's kind of what they did.
Yeah, as they say, KCP should stand for Keep Championship Players. But I know you're talking about like Ingram and Lonzo Ball. Kyle Kuzma and Jordan Clarkson. I mean, this a lot of talent they let walk out the door.
They did.
Goodness. Chuck, what's hitting you about early NBA season? Anything that we're discussing before I let Eitan opine on the New York Knickerbockers?
I'm going to have to kick it back to you because, you know, I haven't watched in the depth I've had in other seasons, but I happen to know the Cleveland Cavaliers are 16-1. I did watch the game versus Celtics a couple of days ago, which we never thought the 15-0 Cavs would be undefeated. But even in a night where Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland couldn't hit a bucket at all, they stayed close throughout the game. Even when Celtics were shooting over 50% from three, they stayed close throughout the game, which leads me to believe they're real, but I haven't watched him enough to give like a good assessment. So I'm gonna have to kick it back to both of you. Are the Cleveland Cavaliers for real?
Eitan?
I mean, they look good to me, you know, so far. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how it'll be, you know, sustainable throughout the entire season, but I think they look very well. I didn't expect that from them this year. So maybe if, I don't know, you could tell me, Dave, if that was expected from you, but I didn't expect that.
Well, certainly not this, but the one thing that made me very excited for the Cavs this year were two things. I was excited about them. I certainly didn't see this, but I was excited for two reasons. One, continuity. Not enough NBA teams put a premium on continuity, but you've got all the stars of Cleveland, Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, all-star Jared Allen, future all-star, in my opinion, Evan Mobley, Caris LeVert, who's related to Gerald LeVert, who's saying Casanova, all these guys. That's true. All these guys together on one team. And I got to tell you, Eitan, I was excited about them also because their coach, Kenny Atkinson, coached one of my favorite teams of the last 20 years. Like one of my favorite teams I've watched as an adult, which was those Brooklyn Nets teams with D'Angelo Russell, Jared Dudley, Joe Harris, Caris LeVert again, Jared Allen. You remember that team, Eitan? That was just like young, hungry, scrappy, having a great time together. God, I love that team so much. And Kenny Atkinson hasn't had a coaching gig since then, largely because he'd gotten offers and was just like, let's see what comes up. And then when he chose this, I was just like, okay, if Kenny Atkinson is choosing this gig, they might be set up for something special. So I'm not
surprised. Hey, DG, let me add, Donovan Mitchell shooting 40% from three. Darius Garland shooting 43% from three. LeVert shooting 46% from three. They're hitting these shots. So I'm wondering, do they maintain that throughout the year? Even Mobley shooting 38% from three in addition to all everything else he does. So, you know, it remains to be seen, but it seems like we could say they need to be reckoned with and now are in the upper echelon of the East.
Well put instead. My goodness, somehow we're just running out of time. Eitan, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the Knicks. Karl Towns shooting out of his mind. The defense ain't great. How do you feel about the Knicks?
I mean, we ran out of time, but they look good so far. They just had a good win yet last night. You know, we have to see. That's all we could do is just we have to wait and see how it keeps going. But so far,
I'm excited.
I'm
excited. Too. It's a good thing Karl Towns is playing that well because you know those New York fans and Dante DiVincenzo. Good gracious. It's like we got to put them in Dante rehab.
It seemed like me, Dante was a better fit with the Knicks. It seemed having a little bit earlier things, but that's, you know, sometimes that's just the system. You know, you're just better in a different system.
Yeah. I miss and you got to give up something to get Kat.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. But, you know, in New York right now, that, you know, New York, Dante, it was like, hey, Dante. You go to Minnesota. Nobody's saying, hey, Dante in Minnesota. They're calling
I loved him. But he had one flaw. He wasn't 7 feet.
That's why that's what kept me out of the NBA. No, I'm just playing.
See, Coach, going off on that statement, Dave.
No. I there's only so far I can go with that statement. Not too far either. But, yo, this has been a great program. Thanks so much, Atan. Thanks so much, Chuck. Thanks, everybody at WPFW. Any last words, anybody?
No, we're good. Great show, as always.
Keep your chin up, everybody. The struggle is coming. For everybody out there, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.
WPFW is excited to announce the return of the Social Justice Calendar, your go-to weekly update on the latest events, actions, and initiatives promoting equity, justice, and change across our community. The calendar's mission is to connect you with the heartbeat of grassroots activism in the DMV. Each week, we'll spotlight rallies, workshops, forums, and community actions happening across the region. If you have an event to share, submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of said event in a format that is no longer than a sentence or two on Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, at least 2 weeks in advance of your event date. Space is limited, so submissions are considered in the order that they are received. The Social Justice Calendar is yet another way that WPFW connects, engages, and uplifts our community as we build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
The WPFW Local Station Board is hosting a town hall meeting on Saturday, December 7th at New Bethany Baptist Church, 1300 10th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., from noon to 2:30 p.m. Plenty of off-street parking is available. As this will be our last town hall while at our present location, 1990 K Street Northwest, we hope that you will attend this important meeting to discuss WPFW's relocation plans, as well as other important issues facing the station. Healthy refreshments will be served. We hope to see you there.
Election Day 1992, throngs of mostly black voters gathered in Detroit City Hall to applaud the installation of the first Democrat in the White House in 12 years. When the applause died down, one black politician said presciently, "It really don't matter. The president could be Democrat or Republican, white or black. The Dow Jones can go up or down 500 points, and black folks still gonna be poor." Thursdays at 2 p.m. beginning November 14th, short